The following content is intended for people who are blind or print impaired.
Engage.
You are listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. I'm Chris Skidmore, and this is Tech Tips. When was the last time you used a computer for banking or shopping online? When was the last time you used a credit or debit card? Here's one you probably haven't thought of. When was the last time you gave someone your personal or financial information over the phone while in a public place? Nearly every week, there is a story in the news about cybersecurity and how a company or individual has had their accounts hacked. This month, I am going to be talking with Ripka Skidmore about cybersecurity and what you can do to make yourself less of a target. Hi, Ripka.
Hello, how are you today?
I'm great. Thanks for talking with me today. We're going to get into cybersecurity here in just a second and what we can do as individuals to make ourselves safer. But first, who is Ripka Skidmore?
So my name is Ripka Skidmore. I have been in cybersecurity for 15 plus years, and I work in the financial industry protecting people's money.
So what is cybersecurity as it relates to those of us who use the internet for our personal use? For example, online banking, online shopping, checking email, casual surfing, that sort of thing.
Those are just a few examples. Some other examples might be your Alexa that you have in your living room, or your TV even hooked up to your Wi-Fi. Those types of things are also part of the internet, and people talk about smart fridges. Those are hooked up and doing things as well. So there are a few different types of cyber attacks out there for the public. The first is a social engineering attack. That's like an email, a phishing email, and spoofed websites that are just out there to convince you to give confidential information or credentials. The second is weak and compromised passwords. They're collected through phishing and data breaches and even ransomware attacks. And the third is unsecured devices and malicious rogue apps that just expose consumers to malware and data loss.
Are there other ways someone's information can be compromised?
Oh, definitely. Everything you do day to day, you are exposing parts of your personal data intentionally, right? When you go to the gas station and you give them your debit card for a snack or a coffee or even gas, there is data being transferred that's about you. Things like on your phone, when you pair your phone to speakers, that pairing actually is sending information about you to your speakers. Even when you're out in public and you're talking on your phone to a friend, when you're doing that, other people can't hear the friend's conversation, but you may be giving personal information to everybody around you.
Especially if you're like me and have a voice that carries.
Definitely. Even something as simple as using the Google Voices, right, or something that's reading back to you on your phone, that's giving information to everybody around you. And a lot of the times that information, you know, you're unintentionally sharing. You're like, what time is it? And it says, it's 5:36 p.m. That's, you know, nobody really cares about sharing that type of information. But sometimes it might be a text message or something that's a little bit more personal.
And I've also heard where people can use your phone's Bluetooth against you and actually steal data off your phone without you even knowing.
Bluetooth, it's very convenient. It is not a very secure method. Just on most devices has a base PIN that you type in to do any type of pairing. And what you're doing when you do a pairing is it's listening for every other type of device that's broadcasting out there. So if you were sitting in a really busy coffee shop and you said pair, right, you're going to get everybody else's devices going, I'm here, I'm here, I'm here. And you may unintentionally select somebody else's device, or they may be able to piggyback off of your device.
And something else that has become popular is being able to take two separate devices and put them close to each other to be able to swap pictures or files. And that's another way somebody can get a hold of your information, right?
Correct. A lot of the things we do for convenience at this time, paying at checkout with your phone or, you know, doing other types of, I know Apple uses something called AirDrop where you can send to all the other Apple phones that are listening in the area. Those unintentional listenings, you know, unintentional communication, you may think, well, it's really easy. I want to leave it set up for any time I might need it. But that gives other people opportunities to go, oh, look, her phone is named Ruthie. And Ruthie definitely is listening to what I want. Now I can kind of follow Ruthie around and get more information about her.
What can I do to prevent another person from using my phone's Bluetooth or, say, AirDrop capabilities?
So one of the things we do in my personal life is turn off services you're not using. So if you're not using Bluetooth speakers or headphones at any given time when you leave the house, go ahead and turn off Bluetooth. The same type of thing can be done for Wi-Fi. Wi-Fi on your phone goes out and tries to find every other Wi-Fi hotspot. Those may be clear and good hotspots, or they may not be. But just by turning off Wi-Fi, you kind of limit your exposure and limit passing out unintentional information.
Mm-hmm. And public Wi-Fis are not secure. Before we get into how to better protect yourself, I want to talk a little bit about scammers. What are scammers and how does that operation work?
The whole idea of a scammer is to get information from you so that they can use it to get other information. When you're talking about something like social engineering, even take, you know, the cyber world and the internet out of it, how many times you've been talking to somebody and you get an uneasy feeling about them because they're asking a few too many questions or things they should have known or things you didn't really want to share. That kind of personal relationship when you meet people in person is going away. And sometimes people try to ask questions and it seems like they're being very genuine. You know, hey, what's the name of your dog? That's a mighty cute husky you got right there. And what they're doing is collecting information. Really? I'm from Maryland. Where in Maryland did you live? Right? It seems very trying to make a connection, but people don't always have the best intentions at heart. And maybe they're looking for the place you were born or your parents or family name. Even birthdays, they can kind of narrow down where birthdays are. And for a long time, Social Security numbers were based on the area you were born. And so they could start piecing that those pieces of data together. They may not be trying to scam you on day one, but they may build a rapport with you to get enough information to impersonate your identity or to hit you up on the internet. And maybe they're not exactly what they seem to be.
You're listening to Tech Tips on the North Carolina Reading Service. We're talking with Rivka Skidmore today about cybersecurity and how you can better protect yourself. Earlier, you mentioned phishing. What exactly is a phishing email or a phishing text, and how can we protect ourselves against them?
When it's a text, it's actually called smishing.
Oh, my bad.
Funny name for it. But they're trying to do the same thing. They're trying to get out there. They look like they're coming from a company that you may know or trust. It may say, hey, this is your bank. Or it may say, Facebook needs you to click here. Your password has been compromised. Those types of information need a little bit more scrutiny to make sure that it is a legit thing. But one thing they do is they're trying to give you a sense of urgency or a dire consequence. You may get an email and it says, this is your bank. If you don't click right now, you're going to lose, you know, so much money. We've noticed bad activity. And it makes you go, oh, no, I need to go take care of that right now. And we tell people, hey, stop for a second. Walk away from the situation. Calm down. Don't click links. First of all, verify that you are dealing with the company that you think it is. Sometimes, and it's a little bit harder to see, in an email, the name of it may say Facebook. But when you hover over the two line in it, it gives you the full email address, and maybe that URL or website address is a little bit different. So what we tell people is don't click the links, don't respond to the email. Reach out if it's from your bank. Go to the known number that you have with your bank on the back of your debit card from your bank statement. Go to their information and call them and ask them.
And whatever you do, never Google a company's phone number. There was a story in the news recently where some airline passengers were scammed after Googling their airline's customer service number when their flight was canceled. They wound up getting taken for a lot of money. Never under any circumstances Google a telephone number.
Yeah, we tell people that when you're searching the web engines, not just Google, but all of the different web engines, the first few entries are usually advertisements, and mm-hmm. a scammer is definitely going to want their stuff at the top of the list. So that's how misinformation gets there. And Google does try to take down a lot of this stuff in a timely manner, but that's why we say please use the number on the back of your card if you're dealing with your bank. If you're dealing with Facebook, go to your normal login for Facebook. Go look and see what they're telling you about who's logging into your account, what type of information is going on.
One of the new things that we've been hearing a lot about recently is AI or artificial intelligence. What can you tell us about that?
AI is such a new industry out there. There are some really great applications, but generally don't share your personal information on the internet. If somebody says, hey, I have this great AI app, go try it out. It's wonderful to try out those things, but I would say in that, don't ask any personal information. Ask questions to try it out that you're curious about, but have no relevance to you. When was the Statue of Liberty built? Was it first placed in New York? Things that just are very general. I would steer clear of any information that is you, the city you're in, a disease or an issue you're concerned about. Just because at this point, AI is not regulated and it is tracking all different kinds of information on you. And that's a good segue into when you're surfing on the internet, everything you put in, everything you search, those little pieces of data are being calculated. And I'll give you an example. If you've ever been searching arthritis medication like Bengay or Aspergream or something, and you're like, hey, I just need to know if my local grocery store has this. And then you go over to Facebook and a couple days later, you see an ad for that. That's not a coincidence. They're tracking you, and in your web browsing history, other websites are going into your cookies and picking up data. I love my car more than anything else. But every once in a while, I get a little thing like, hey, I want to drive a motorcycle, right? And I want to take this out. So every once in a while, we'll go motorcycle, motorcycle, motorcycle. A few days later, a motorcycle ad will pop up. And we all go, how did they know? And sometimes that's because your phones are listening. If you're using any type of voice-to-text or any type of helper on your phone, it really is listening all the time to everything you're saying and storing that information.
And that probably also carries over to home assistants.
Definitely. So if you're using Alexa to work your lights or make a purchase on Amazon or to listen to your music, right? You may start getting ads in some of the places you go for a country musician who's coming to the area where you are. And you go, wait a second, how do they know I'm right here? That's part of the information that's being collected is what your city is and how that data can be collected together. Scammers can also use that information in the same way. And they can go, well, I know that this person lives in North Carolina, and I can say I'm from North Carolina and start asking them questions and kind of narrow down how I want to target them in some way.
One other thing I want to talk about briefly regarding artificial intelligence is the use of AI in voice work. This is a new thing where people are using AI to read long passages, whether it be advertising or anything that needs to be read aloud. They will sometimes impersonate famous people, somebody you know, celebrities, that sort of thing. And there are a couple of things that you can listen for to spot an AI voice. One of those is inflections. They may have inflections in the wrong place. They may have no inflections at all, no emotion whatsoever, and it's read monotone. Another thing is saying something that's not quite right. And here's what I mean by that. Instead of saying, this car is $2,000, it might say, this car is $2,000. And it drops the S. So you need to listen for these subtle little cues to be able to spot an AI voice. You're listening to Tech Tips on the North Carolina Reading Service. We're talking with Ripka Skidmore today about cybersecurity. We've been talking about how people can gain access to your information, and we've even touched a little bit on things that you can do to better protect yourself and be on guard. I want to dive a little bit deeper into that and talk about some ways that you can protect yourself online.
The first thing we would recommend is to update your devices. I know it's inconvenient. A lot of settings change when you run those check updates. Things get a little bit inconvenient because things may move around the screen, or a new service may stop for a little while until you investigate that. But updating your devices definitely protects you from any type of infection, like ransomware or malware out there. So I would use automatic updates every single time. The second thing we would say is where you have your internet source, your Wi-Fi, get the strongest encryption you can get. There are Wi-Fi settings, and I realize that it is, you know, some people aren't comfortable configuring their Wi-Fi. Get a trusted friend or a relative to help you with this. Disable your guest Wi-Fi. Change your network name and your network administrative access. Use a very complex password for those things. Don't let people connect to your Wi-Fi. When you let other people on your Wi-Fi, they now can see your computers. They can see what type of electronics you have. They can gather information that you thought was private. It's like letting people into your wallet. We say secure your smart devices. Change default passwords. Lock down your privacy settings. Limit what you're connecting to your Wi-Fi. Does your stove really need to connect to your Wi-Fi? It might be convenient for to have it tell you when dinner's almost done. But if you live in a house where you can just hear the timer, is that enough? Laundry is the same way. Does your washing machine really need to connect to that Wi-Fi? Those are things that definitely you want to make sure you're limiting in any way. Alexa, even, your TV, your DVD player, do all these things really need to go out through the Wi-Fi? Or is there one piece you could connect to the Wi-Fi? If you have just one streaming media player, does your TV have to connect?
No, you're exactly right. Everything in the house that is connected to the internet is a point of access for someone to get your personal information. And that leads perfectly into the next thing I want to talk about, passwords.
I love the fact that you brought up passwords because they are definitely the first line of defense. Having a different password for everywhere you log in, it is inconvenient. I will totally be the first person to say, I can't remember all these passwords. I just need it to work. But by going through and having a longer password, by having a complex password, you can go through and protect yourself so that people can't guess your password. What we tell people is take a phrase. I'm going to use spiders have legs. If I take spiders have legs, we want to use capital letters. We want to use lowercase letters. We want to have abbreviation, different spellings, numbers, punctuations. You want to make it complex. But it is something that, you know, means something to you. Don't choose passwords based on any details that are confidential. No birth dates, no anniversary dates, no family names, not even your pet name. Because remember at the beginning of the conversation when I said someone may be asking you all about your husky? Well, guess what? If you're using your husky's name or you're using the word husky in your password, people can guess that fairly easily. Don't use the same passwords for multiple accounts.
You talk about using different passwords for all of our different accounts. Is there a way to keep up with that?
Yeah, let's touch base on why first before we tell you how. If people know your email address and you're using the same password for your email address and your password, they're going to hit every single one of the common URLs with that username and password, and they're in everything. It is incredibly difficult to figure out where they got or what they're doing. So using a password keeper, there are many of them out there. They're free. It can go out and you can put your password, the URL, that's the website address, and your account, your password, your URL, and then you're using that to log into these pages. So you don't actually have to see those passwords. Many of them also can help you generate a strong password. It doesn't mean anything to me, but I don't have to remember it. It's in my password keeper, and now I just have to remember that password keeper password.
No kidding. Password keepers are definitely a way to help you better protect your information. Another thing is something called multi-factor authentication. What is that and how does it work?
In the industry, multi-factor authentication, we call it MFA, just because it's easier to say for us when we're talking.
Definitely.
But basically, what that is a second form. So you have your password, but it's a second way of validating your you. And it is something you know, such as a password or a PIN, something you have, such as your card or your mobile device. And it can be something such as a fingerprint or your biometrics. So when you're talking with your bank and they say, do you want to set up MFA? I will absolutely say, do it. Go ahead, set up MFA. Everywhere that offers you MFA, it's not going to hurt you. They may send you a verification ID to your cell phone when you're logging into a website. And it says, hey, this is a one-time passcode we want you to use. We know you know your username and password, but we're verifying your you through your mobile phone or your email address, and you're going to take the number you're given and you're going to put that into our website as well to make sure who they know how to contact you is really you, and here's how to proceed.
And now I want to shift gears just a little bit and talk about sharing documents over the internet. How can we protect ourselves there?
I would definitely say if you're sharing any type of personal information, you're going to want to use secure email in some way or a secure site in some way. That isn't just saying I'm going to use my Gmail account and send it over to your Gmail account. If you're working with your bank, they have a secure method available, and you can actually, on your bank website, when you log into there, you can see send secure email. And what that does is encrypt it end to end so that your document is always contained and always placed through their system and protected.
Now that we've talked a lot about protecting your identity and your accounts, let's talk about protecting your wallet. And I know that one of the best ways to do this is by getting a credit report. How can somebody get their credit report and how does that work?
There are three major credit reporting agencies, Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion. And you can go to annualcreditreport.com and you can request your free credit reports. Right now, due to the pandemic, they've been all giving regular credit reports for free. So you are not charged a fee to check your credit reports regularly. But in general, we say you can get one free credit report a year per company. So we would space those out. Like in January, you go to Equifax. In June, you go to Experian. In October, you go to TransUnion. Just making sure that your credit report has the data that you expect it to see, that there are no lines of credit or credit cards or cars or mortgages that you weren't aware of.
Yeah.
Because those types of things happen. We also tell you, hey, you know what you can do for free to protect yourself is a credit freeze. On these sites, you can put a credit freeze out there and then nobody can open up a line of credit without your approval. Let's say you put a credit freeze on today and in a couple days you realize, oh no, I need to go get a new car. You notify the credit reporting agency, you release the credit freeze for the time period you need so that when you go to buy that car, they can run your credit and everything will be fine. And then you put the credit freeze back on. Is it a little inconvenient? Yes. But for major purchases, it's always great to be planning and know that you're not making a spur-of-the-moment purchase unintentionally or somebody else is making a spur-of-the-moment purchase without your knowledge.
And how important also is it to keep your contact information up to date?
Oh, absolutely. I know of people who have gone into their credit reporting and it says they live in Wyoming and they're like, I've never been to Wyoming. That's kind of interesting. You can dispute anything in your credit reports. It just takes a little bit of time on the credit reporting agency sites. They may ask for a bill. They may ask for information to show where your residency is, what your contact information is. But all that will only help protect you and your identity.
And finally, I like this one, setting up bank alerts.
All banks allow you to set up alerts notifying you about activity. I know on our bank, we can say, hey, I want to do something as simple as let me know when my balance gets a little too low. And I set that threshold, right? Because maybe I wasn't paying attention and I made a couple purchases I wasn't supposed to. All of a sudden, my phone goes off and it says, boop, boop, your balance is down to $100. But there's also alerts you can set up of, hey, let me know if I make a purchase over $500. If that's not something you're normally doing, set an alert up. It's not going to hurt anything. If you're over at buying a new TV and it goes to $540, you know, you get an alert and you're like, look, it worked. I know I'm making that purchase. But mm-hmm. what if that purchase happened and you didn't know anything about it, right? Maybe somebody got a hold of your debit card and tried that information. You would know immediately to contact your bank and being like, that's not me. I'm not in Miami, Florida, and I'm definitely not buying a TV. They would immediately reject that purchase and lock down your cards and help you get replacement cards. There's a couple other things you can do to protect yourself. You can, for your tax returns, you can actually set up a PIN with the IRS so that nobody can go ahead and send unemployment claims or fraudulent unemployment claims or fraudulent tax returns on your behalf. Also, there is the Postal Service uses USPS informed delivery to let you know when your packages are coming to your house. Maybe you're not going to be home, or maybe you're going to be out of town. There are ways of communicating with the Postal Service to make sure that people aren't just kind of drive by your mailbox and this looks kind of good until you get home.
Okay, we've covered a lot of information today. Is there anything else you can think of that you'd like to say?
So I would make sure that no one should be embarrassed if they're not comfortable doing any of these things. There are people out there who will help. You can contact your local library who may be doing computer classes or mobile phone classes to help you lock down your settings. I know that friends and family would definitely be willing to help. And the scariest part of this is thinking you don't know something. You do know. You are very smart. And sometimes this world moves very, very fast, and it just takes saying, hey, I have a question. Can you explain this to me a little bit different? And there are absolutely resources out there to help you.
Awesome. Well, I'm going to thank you for your time. It was greatly appreciated, and I've definitely learned a lot.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it.
I want to thank Rivka one more time for talking with me today about cybersecurity. And before we go, I want to briefly recap some of the highlights from our conversation. First, use a strong password and never use the same password for multiple accounts. Use a password manager. Never click on unfamiliar links or on links from emails that look like they came from someone you know unless you've verified it. Next, never answer personal questions about yourself to someone you do not know. Set up bank alerts to notify you about activity in your account. Routinely check your credit report. The website mentioned was annualcreditreport.com. And finally, never Google a phone number. Always use the phone number on the back of your credit or debit card, or go to the bank or company's actual website. We've run out of time for this month's episode of Tech Tips. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Chris Skidmore, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Tech Tips is available online at ncreadingservice.org. If you have any questions or comments, give us a call at 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to Tech Tips on the North Carolina Reading Service.